Hi, thank you so much for the very nice introduction. That works, thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so Dr. Moenfer actually couldn't be here with us today. He had an emergency surgery, so he had to fly back to Orlando. Anyway, we can get started. There are no financial disclosures or conflicts of interest. In implementing our study, we hope to accomplish the following: to address the global burden of diabetes and diabetes-related retinopathy. Secondly, to analyze the attitudes and preferences of West African ophthalmologists with regards to the diagnosis and treatment of diabetic retinopathy. Thirdly, we wanted to identify proposed conceptual frameworks and interventional strategies in addressing the public health burden of diabetes-related vision loss in developing economies. And fourth, to formulate novel conceptual frameworks and interventional strategies that incorporate the self-reported unmet needs and obstacles in such developing economies. And the country of choice was Ghana, partly because both Dr. Moenfer and I have spent quite a few months in Ghana working with the populations there. And as Pam said, I know that the audience here today is probably very familiar with these numbers, but just as background, I will tell you it again. So according to the International Diabetes Foundation Federation, 366 million people were affected by diabetes in 2011. This number will increase by 52% to 558 million people by the year of 2030. As of 2011, 80% of people with diabetes live in predominantly low and middle income countries. 183 million people with diabetes are still undiagnosed. And in 2011, diabetes caused 4.6 million deaths, making up $465 billion for the U.S. and basically becoming 11% of the total healthcare expenditure. So, as you all know, diabetes has many complications, including neuropathic and retinopathic changes, making diabetes-related blindness a serious global public health concern. According to the World Health Organization, diabetic retinopathy is responsible for almost 5% of nearly 40 million cases of blindness in the world, but with timely and appropriate intervention, the rates of blindness can be reduced by up to 90%. Because retinopathy is linked epidemiologically to diabetes, population-based methods for reducing retinopathic vision loss call for shared primary and community-level intervention. And this has included evidence-based screening for diabetes, proper health education, affordable and sustainable access to medications, and the societal interest and, of course, motivation to make these interventions sustainable. The survey that we implemented mainly dealt with the following interventional strategies: the use of telemedicine, which is the use of telecommunication and information technology from a distance, access to technology and equipment, training of non-medical personnel, and of course, the delivery of diabetic eye care by general ophthalmologists. So I'm sure most people in here know how diabetes works, and probably you also are very familiar with how diabetic retinopathy works. But just to recap, diabetes will affect the circulatory system of the retina, weakening the vessels to create swelling or edema within the retina, resulting in signs and symptoms of blurred vision, floaters and flashes, and sudden loss of vision. In proliferative diabetic retinopathy, the circulation problems cause the areas of the retina to become ischemic, leading to neovascularization. And for those who don't know what neovascularization means, that's where new vessels will develop in as the circulatory system is attempting to maintain levels of oxygen within the retina. And most of the times, these vessels are very delicate and will thus hemorrhage. causing these spots or floaters within the retina and the vitreous. In later phases of the disease, you will have abnormal vessel growth and scar tissue, which can cause serious problems such as retinal detachment and glaucoma. Studies indicate that in the U.S., in each year, there's over 33,000 new cases of diabetic macular edema, 86,000 new cases of proliferative diabetic retinopathy, and 14,000 new cases of diabetes-related blindness each year. So how to diagnose? The best way to diagnose diabetic retinopathy is with direct ophthalmoscope, fluorescent angiography, retinal photography, and ultrasound imaging of the eye. And as for treatment, it's best to use panretinal photocoagulation, which is a laser, intravitreal anti-VEGF drugs, which work against neovascularization. It prevents the blood vessels from forming. And, of course, vitrectomy by a capable retinal surgeon. And so this is with the fundoscope. You can actually view the retina, which will give you a clearer picture into the pathology. The first one is just of the normal retina. And the second one is what non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy looks like. Clearly, it does not look as nice as the normal retina. And the third is within proliferative diabetic retinopathy, which shows macular edema with yellow exudates. And the fourth is vitreous hemorrhage from neovascularization of the optic nerve. All right, so the World Health Organization has agreed that the following are the principles of eye care delivery to diabetics, that they should undergo an eye evaluation if you find presence of diabetic retinopathy, that if it is detected, they should be referred to an eye care provider, and thirdly, that they should be aware and motivated to undergo the exam and to return for follow-ups. That's pretty self-explanatory, but the real question is how to implement delivery of eye care and prevention while maintaining costs. So according to the World Bank, there are different levels of diabetes prevention that are balanced with cost effectiveness. So with the different level of interventions, clearly in the level one interventions where the hemoglobin A1C levels are very high, and high blood pressure is out of control, if you intervene for those persons, that will be very cost-saving and appears to be feasible. But when you get down to the level two and level three interventions, which are much more more along the lines of prevention, they're harder to implement and more costly. And of course, lifestyle changes at the bottom is cost-effective and cost-saving. So now that I've laid the foundation, let's talk about Ghana. So Ghana is a country in West Africa. It's bordered by the Ivory Coast to the west, Burkina Faso to the north, Togo to the east, and the Gulf of Guinea to the south. It was previously a British colony, but it established its independence in 1957. That is a photo I took when I was there back in 2007. So in terms of demographics, in 2009, Ghana had a population of over 23 million, but in terms of physicians, they only have 2,033 physicians, making that a doctor-to-population ratio of 1 to 11,503. 3 years later, in 2012, that disparity has widened, with an increased ratio of 1 to 11,929, according to the Ghana Health Service. In all of Ghana, there are approximately 45 ophthalmologists, with only one ophthalmologist for the entire northern region of Tamale. So if you can imagine, that's one ophthalmologist for 100,000 something people, which makes it very difficult to get eye care and eye help. Other risk factors, if you look at obesity in Ghana. As we all know, obesity increases the risk of diabetes along with other medical conditions. In 2008, 4% of men and nearly 12% of women had a BMI of over 30, with a 16-to-1 prevalence for the southern region of Ghana, which is Accra, the capital. Obesity is on the rise among women and among the urban populations. There's no data from 2012, but numbers are increasing. In terms of tobacco use, that's also prevalent, which is another risk factor for high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, potentially diabetes as well. From 2003 to 2008, fewer men and women reported smoking, but there was an increase in alcohol use. Lastly, other risk factors in Ghana, looking at high blood pressure and raised fasting blood glucose, you can see that in 2008, 32.7% of Ghanaian males had high blood pressure, comparable to 31.6% of females, 9.9% of males, and 10.3% of Ghanaian females had elevated fasting blood glucose. And then if we look at the other numbers, in 2007, 10.4 million Africans, and I'm talking about the entire continent of Africa, had diabetes. By 2025, that number is going to increase to 18.7 million. As for Ghana alone, in 2012, over 4 million Ghanaians had diabetes. That's 17% of the total population. I guess just as a number of reference, if you compare that to the United States, 25.8 million Americans have diabetes, but that's only 8.3% of the population. All right, so getting to my materials and methods, our study design was a prospective 10-question survey distributed online, and our inclusion criteria were all currently practicing Ghanaian board-certified ophthalmologists in 2012. And what we collected were attitudes, preferred practice patterns, preferences, and unmet needs regarding the current population of Ghanaian patients living with diabetic retinopathy. So, in terms of our results, of surveyed Ghanaian ophthalmologists, only 4.4% of their collective 141,000 patients were annually identified as being diabetic. And this is significant because this is a figure that's well below what would be expected from previously described population-based surveys. Roughly 20% of the identified diabetic patients were said to have diabetic retinopathy. Most required referral to specialty clinics, primarily due to a lack of equipment and time. That's 71% and 17% respectively, as well as self-reported lack of competence and confidence in administering laser treatments, 70%. They said that if they were provided with a laser, almost 90% of Ghanaian ophthalmologists, they said they would be willing to deliver laser surgery for their diabetic patients, but they would be hindered by poor reimbursement and the burden of patients in need of cataract surgery, and that was 34% collectively. As for strategies to address the lack of equipment and time, we received variable responses, while equipment provision received a high level of interest, the idea of training non-medical care providers to help was met unfavorably. So from our results, we can summarize the obstacles to addressing diabetic retinopathy as the following. Poor physician-to-patient ratio, untrained personnel, scarcity of resources, which includes time and equipment, burden of cataract surgeries, burden of poor reimbursement, and lack of curative results. So while there is no known ideal number of ophthalmologists per population, it's clear that having an adequately trained workforce to implement diabetic retinopathy screening and treatment is a key component of any screening program. So whether or not those activities require highly trained personnel, or if the screening of diabetic retinopathy can be relegated to eye care professionals, or if community-based providers through clinical exam or telemedicine can help, that we're not certain. But as the economies of developing nations grow and their populations age, there is an increased pressure on existing resources to treat not only diabetic retinopathy, but also other persistent causes of vision impairment, such as cataracts. The other item to address is the burden of poor reimbursement and lack of curative results. The thing with diabetic retinopathy is that most of the treatment does not improve vision, it just stabilizes the condition. And even then, laser treatment may may cause some decrease in vision and other side effects. Therefore, it's difficult to motivate patients to present for care and to receive treatment. And so this may be a challenge for some programs, in addition to dealing with other programs like the health literacy of the target population and limitation of the current education materials. Another thing is it may be necessary, well, understanding the interpersonal and intercultural perceptions and differences will be relevant when trying to increase utilization of eye care services by patients with diabetes. It's been suggested that maybe perhaps a direct one-on-one interaction with tangible and measurable feedback mechanisms, sort of like a marketing approach, may be helpful. And furthermore, educational messages should be appropriately oriented to each culture and society and to different groups within the society. And other measures may include involving like the local population in the healthcare infrastructure and to also employ different modes of communication to access as many different target audiences as possible. So in conclusion, the management of diabetic retinopathy presents unique challenges as compared to other conditions that benefit from single point intervention, such as refractive errors or cataracts. After assessing the attitudes, preferred practice patterns, preferences and unmet needs of general ophthalmologists in Ghana, we've been able to conclude that the limited supply of ophthalmologists, the even lower prevalence of retinal subspecialists, the limited access to equipment and surgeries, and of course significant infrastructural and logistical challenges all present major obstacles to patients seeking an uninterrupted longitudinal pattern of care. From our study, we've determined that the most significant unmet need is lack of equipment and training in administering laser treatments. Lack of time is actually not a primary key determinant, but however, there is a heavy burden upon scarce specialty clinics to provide for these patient referrals. And even as mentioned before, even if they were provided a laser, most Ghanaian ophthalmologists said they would be hindered to treat these patients due to poor reimbursement and an overriding volume of patients who need cataract surgery. In sum, our findings appear to challenge some of the currently held beliefs regarding the effectiveness of interventional strategies being developed, and it will be necessary in the coming years to address existing structural issues of poor reimbursement and the lack of training, equipment, and personnel before attempting to implement current interventional strategies. Although the ophthalmologists, through the survey, they seemed averse to training non-medical personnel in order to account for the limited supply of skilled providers, a certain amount of cross-training and increasing dependence on technology may be necessary. Primary and community providers may be necessary to screen patients with diabetes for retinopathy. And of course, other skilled personnel may be necessary to provide retinal images for review and analysis at designated reading centers. Finally, ophthalmologists and retinal specialists have a duty to begin effectively teaching and educating their diabetic patients too. And here are my references. And that is it.